The Tom Woods Show, episode 1341.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. We're talking today to Cliff Maloney, who is president of Young Americans for Liberty, an organization that I have supported for quite some time. Cliff has an interesting personal history of his own in terms of his activities, and we'll talk to him about that. But I would mention that he was an intern for Ron Paul all the way back in 2011, and just an all-around good guy. So I wanted to check in with Young Americans for Liberty, see what they're up to, see what things are like on the campuses these days, and how these good folks are fighting back. Cliff, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's get a little bit of background, the history of YAL. I remember the origins of YAL back when I was a younger American than I am now. And I got to know the person I guess was the founder and was president for some time, Jeff Frazee. And that was when I was most involved. That was when I had more hair, maybe more pounds on me. And the Ron Paul movement was alive and well at that time. Give us a little bit of the background where the whole thing came from.
Yeah, well, you're spot on there. The organization was founded back in 2008 after this old guy in Texas who we all love, Ron Paul, decided that he was going to run for president and really do it in a big way and got all these young people excited. I mean, here's a gentleman, I believe at that point he was in his, 70s, and had this huge following, as you and I know, of people who cared about the principles of liberty and the Constitution. And so his youth director during the 2008 campaign was a gentleman named Jeff Frazee. And Jeff decided after the campaign was over, Ron's presidential race, you know, there was all this excitement, all this support amongst young people. We had to keep this thing going. And so he decided to launch Young Americans for Liberty as a 501c4 nonprofit organization. And so Jeff was at the helm until 2016. You know, we built from 2008 to 2012. And obviously, you know, 2012 was a huge year for the movement. And in 2016, I was able to I'll be honored, honestly, with the opportunity to take over what was, you know, the continuation of Students for Ron Paul back in 08, and now trying to take Young Americans for Liberty to new heights and trying to really instill that message of really individual liberty with young people across America.
So that's exactly what you folks have been doing ever since then. And you had tremendous growth out of the gate. You had chapters all over the country. And so you started doing a lot of activities on the campuses. So let's now go to the next chapter in that. Actually, you know what? There's another chapter that I don't want to skip over, and that's the Cliff Maloney life chapter, because you are also a young American, let's say, and you obviously had something. You don't just fall into the Ron Paul movement. Something happens to you. Something grabs you. Something strikes you, and you're never the same. So give us a little bit of your story, where you're from, and what that moment was, if there was one.
Sure. So, yeah, when Young Americans for Liberty was founded, I was in my junior year of high school. So I was nowhere to be found. You know, I hadn't even heard of the individual Ron Paul probably until, you know, late in 2007, 2008. And so I come from Philadelphia, the suburbs of Philadelphia. Grew up, you know, a blue-collar working family. And it was 2010. I was in college studying to be a math teacher. And I had stumbled upon a video. And the video was Ron Paul, one of those, you know, supercut clips of A New Hope 2008, you know, type, all these different clips from the debates and just these different moments with Ron Paul and just showing his consistency for 40 years. And I kind of just sat there and said, my gosh, you know, how is this guy not the president? How are these ideas not mainstream? How, you know, why aren't people in the streets screaming about this and talking about Ron Paul? And it was really the moment with Giuliani that kind of struck a chord with me to say, man, this is just some powerful stuff. And I'm sure most of the listeners, you know, remember this, the 07, 08 debate moment with Giuliani lecturing him, who was kind of the poster child, if you will, for 9/11, about blowback and just really understanding, you know, what foreign policy means. And I had never heard this type of thinking from somebody who actually, you know, was going to lead the country, or from a political thought leader, to talk about the golden rule and treating people how you want them to be treated. So that was my big awakening, Tom. And it was, I guess, 3 or 4 months after that, I applied for an internship. There was a gentleman named Jeff Deist and Norm Singleton, who I'm sure you know, who took a chance on me, and they allowed me to intern for Dr. Paul in D.C. And that was in 2011. And really, the rest is history. Went on to meet Jeff Frazee when I interned. He told me to start a Yale chapter. I did so on my campus in Pennsylvania. Did that for a year, then became the Pennsylvania State Chair for Young Americans for Liberty. And decided I was going to teach. And like I said, I was going to school to teach. And Jeff Frazee had talked me into, him and Ed King had talked me into coming to YAL full time. I did that in the spring of 2014, did that for a year. And then Rand Paul asked me to be his national youth director for the presidential cycle. So I hopped over to YAL. And then once that wrapped up, Jeff asked me to take the reins. And that was once again 2016 in May. And now I've been out to helm for about 2 years. And really, it's something I got to pinch myself. You know, I get to crisscross the country, meet with students, engage students, and really try to get them to care about these principles and figure out how to take our ideas mainstream without watering them down. I think the one thing that Ron taught all of us is that there is power in bringing the message 200 proof and not trying to, you know, sugarcoat it, but figuring out ways that we can reach people with that pure message. I think that's the name of the game and what I'm dedicated to.
I got to ask you, it's got to be frustrating that here you are armed with ideas that we all know are really, really good ones. And yet it seems like this democratic socialist movement that's taking shape just came out of nowhere almost overnight. It had a huge, huge following. And frankly, I'm not saying everybody in it is stupid, but I would say that it's not because all of them are reading a lot of books and really knowledgeable about any of the, about the subject matter. It's more that the simplicity of the message, look, You want it's, this guy has this stuff. You want it. We're going to give it to you. I mean, anybody can understand that. And it appeals to the basest instincts of mankind. And there's no pause ever in any of these programs to think that there might be consequences that you yourself might not like. Nope. It's just going to work out the way we want. I get the stuff I want. No bad consequences. It must be frustrating that you have to struggle sometimes to get people's attention when it seems effortless on the other side.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'll tell you, I mean, I don't hide my frustration. It's definitely a time when you have people like Cortez and in New York and some of these other individuals that everything is kind of rhetoric. You know, there is, and it's not only just that it's the Democrat socialist, Tom. I mean, it's rhetoric in general. And this is something that, you know, we've been trying to push for a while, which is talking ideas, talking solutions, and not just screaming identity politics, you know, not just trying to group people and really just focus on emotion. But what's happened is the Democrat socialists have gotten very good at least over the last, I would say, 6 months to a year, really understanding how to message, really understanding how to, and even if they're not understanding, like you said, people are listening just because of the platforms and the different biases in the media. People are allowed from that ideology, they're allowed to be able to speak and have a platform, when a lot of times, you know, the people that we want to kind of highlight and the ideas we want to amplify, you know, it's very difficult. But I will tell you this, I mean, I warn against it from everybody. You know, anytime people just jump to these identity politics, I think that the left is going to have a problem over the next year when things like actual legislation come out. I mean, you look at this new Green Deal. I mean, we talk to students about it. People like the new Green Deal until they find out what's in it, you know. And when you start to have real conversations about your taxes going from, you know, 25% as somebody making $40,000 a year to, you know, the sky's the limit. And so I think the challenge is there and the frustration is there. But for us, it's really about figuring out how you connect with students, get them to at least engage. And what we find is when they start to ask questions, when they actually analyze something, they're very much on our side. They believe in capitalism at their root. It's getting them away from the sound bites and the talking points and the, you know, the free stuff, if you will, that the Democrats and the Bernies and Cortezes want to offer, and showing them what hard work looks like, what markets actually do, and how that benefits everybody and how that creates a much more freer and more prosperous society. So I would say our number one challenge is actually just getting people to engage. And let me give you one little note here, Tom. You know, most people think that, you know, oh, young people are so socialist and they leave college just, you know, they're ready to vote for Bernie and they're ready to vote us into this communist utopia. I actually find, and some people will hear this and think that this is pretty cynical or think that this is pretty sad, but this is what I find. I find that most people leave college pretty apathetic. If you're talking about a philosophical or political, you know, belief, most people leave apathetic. I mean, most people, you know, are apathetic. Most people are trying to make ends meet. They're trying to pay their mortgage. They're trying to pay off their student loan debt. So when we're talking to college students, I mean, it's that same type of apathy, right? It's trying to get people to at least engage. And that's why the work we do on campus, you know, we don't focus it around a political party. We don't even focus it around a political campaign. When we're on campus, we focus it around ideas. We focus it on, you know, whether we're talking about monetary policy in the Federal Reserve, we're talking about debt, we're talking about civil liberties, free speech, the right to defend yourself, privacy. Those are the things that if you can connect with somebody and get them to engage, that's how we start to holistically get people to really understand what the role of government is. And that is the question. You know, Ron always used to say that, and that's a lot of what we are aiming to do, is get people to ask that question. Because if somebody asks themselves, what is the proper role of government? We've already won the argument, because that's the debate we need to have. When you have that debate, then we can actually talk about ideas and where government should be involved and shouldn't be involved. Whereas if the debate is, you know, should we have socialist healthcare or full communism, you know, that's not going to lead us to real liberty or to real free markets.
Well, I think you made a good point about trying to get specific about things, because, yeah, a Green New Deal might sound superficially attractive to somebody. Then you spell out the specifics that are involved and just how radical the changes are. I was just reading a column today saying that the Green New Deal is like a suicide note for the Democrats. This is an unforced error. There's no reason all these candidates have to be latching onto this thing, because all Trump has to do is just point to the absurdity of it through the whole campaign. But they're all afraid not to be on the side of Ocasio-Cortez, so they have to sign on. But the specifics are crazy. All you got to do is hit them on the specifics. And I just saw a video, maybe you saw it, that the campus reform people put out, where they actually ran by the students the actual features of the plan. And then the students start saying, now, whoa, hold on just a cotton picking minute here. That is not what I thought was part of this. All right. So you guys have been on the campuses for a long time. You've started chapters all over the place. What would you say you've learned from this? What works? What doesn't work? Your vibrant chapters, what are they doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So I think that what we found is being able to organize on college campuses, I think, is still the most effective tactic, because you have young people in a state of mind where they're still trying to, let's say, learn, right? They're developing, they're thinking, they're interested. And so I think it's still the best platform for us to build, let's say, the Youth Army for Liberty, no pun intended, you know, for peace. But what I'm finding is we sat down, I guess it was probably 2 years ago, to try to understand. You know, we have these huge races for president. You get involved in these huge Senate races and congressional races. And as a movement that cares about ideas, and as an organization that is trying to reach young people and figure out how we advance liberty, you have to analyze what you are doing. And I told you at the top of the show, I mean, I'm a math teacher by trade. I like to keep the numbers simple. And this is why, you know, the monetary policy interests me and the debt. But we looked at the numbers, and the numbers show, you know, we're spending millions of dollars as a movement on some of these huge races, but we're missing kind of the basics. I like to say that we're penny smart and dollar dumb, and that we don't really have a bench out there. We don't really have a way of showing that the movement is growing, or to try to build on some of the things that Ron taught us. And so I sat down with the team to kind of analyze where would the best impact be to take our youth activists from campus and try to bring them out in the community. You know, is it to just partner with local nonprofits? Is it to get involved in electoral politics? What is it that we could do to kind of not just demonstrate impact, but create even more impact off campus in the communities? You know, I jokingly rest in peace to Walter, Congressman Walter Jones, who just passed. But at one YALCON, he said, you know what it's time to do if we really want to advance liberty? It's time to get in the streets. We need to be in the streets for liberty. And I will tell you that that was kind of where my head was how do we figure out how we take Ron's message, Ron's entire youth organization, how do we take what we're trying to put together and make a difference and reach people? And so we looked at different options. And as we looked at the electoral process, I'm getting in the weeds here, Tom, so feel free to cut me off. But I think some of these details are important. We looked at how you can actually reach people. And when you look at electorally, people send mail, people do digital ads, radio, they're on TV, they knock doors. And all of those things I just listed, except for knocking doors, you really could do if somebody gave you $1 million. And we've learned in the liberty movement that we can't expect money. As a grassroots movement that believes in ideas, you can't expect to go toe-to-toe with the establishment when it comes to money. So we have to look critically. What is our competitive advantage? And for us, it was so glaringly obvious. We have these young people who care about ideas. They're energetic. They're passionate. Let's go out and talk to the American people. And so we landed on door knocking. But then an even more important decision was, well, okay, if we're going to go out and door knock and we're going to talk to individuals, do we want to do the presidential races? Do we want to do these big time Senate races, you know, where you don't have much of an impact? We looked at everything from dog catchers, city council, state legislative, congressional, senatorial, all the way up to president. I mean, we analyzed all of them and we assigned point values to it. You know, what is the value of getting somebody elected to this office? And more importantly, how can you educate the voters? How can you get the message out? How can you get more people to open their ideas to liberty through the campaigns? Because winning is not, you know, that's not the end game. Ron Paul, wait, you know, so many people woke up because of Ron's message in 08 and 2012. And so we analyzed this and we came down to the conclusion that there is this gaping hole at the state legislative level, not just for liberty, but how accessible it is to get somebody to run. You want to run for Congress, you need to raise $500,000. And you've got to be very well known. You've got to have name ID. You've got to do a lot of things that are not easy to do overnight. If you want to run for state house in many of the states in this country, you know, if you can get name ID, if you could be a local and you can raise $50,000, I mean, you could be a viable candidate. And so what we decided to do in 2018 was to spend a lot of our time focusing in, and we launched a program called Operation Win at the Door to try to build a bench of 250 Ron Pauls across the country at the state legislative level by the end of 2022. And what we think that would do is it would actually give the ideas of liberty a microphone. It would be a bench because, look, out of those 250, if we can get them elected, politicians run for higher office. And so if we can keep them accountable to liberty, and if 100 of them run for Congress and we can get 50 more Ron Pauls in, we think that that's a real step in the right direction. And the third thing is, you know, it gives us some credibility. Not only a platform for the ideas and builds the bench, but it really, we can pass actual liberty-minded legislation, which then serves as a training ground, if you will, or a test ground for federal policy. So all of these things put together is what led us to launch this Operation Win at the Door. The tactic is taking our students. We typically put 10 students on the ground for a state house race. We'll put them there for a month. They'll knock 30,000 doors. We pay them a small stipend. We pay for their housing. We pay for their gas money. And we're trying to reach voters and mobilize them for the next Ron Paul. We did 76 races in 2018 as a test case, and we elected 37 liberty legislators across the country. So it's an exciting time for the organization, but I think what's even more exciting is, you know, it's a measurable way for us to get out and educate people on the principles of liberty while electing future Ron Pauls and doing it in a way where we're actually able to scale this up and potentially win 250 races by the end of 2022. That's where we're at today.
All right. So I don't know how you could quantify it, but how can you estimate for us, let's say, the fraction of your activities that are aimed at politics and races as opposed to we're going to have a conference or we're going to bring in some speaker or host a debate or whatever?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, I mean, we run things, we have some, there's a breakdown of educational activities versus political. And we knocked about 1 million doors in 2018 with under a, let's say, $2 million budget. Our total spend as an organization to build what we're building, to educate students, to work on campus, to host our different training events, we spent about $5.5 million in 2018. So the idea is that, and let me be really clear about this, Tom, because some people say, well, are you guys moving away from the education? You know, you can't lose your principal. That's everything. That is the only way any of this works, because the way that we are able to energize and mobilize our students is because we have these core set of principles that we're able to recruit on, that we are able to educate on, that we're able to host speakers on, that our chapters are able to meet, discuss, debate, and really have a dialogue about. That is the whole energy. We have to double down on what we've been doing on campus for the last 10 years. I mean, we have to continue to kind of – those ideas are what build the pipeline. And so that pipeline has to continue to grow. And then from that pipeline, it's about taking our message out in the community. So the 37 people we got elected, you know, it's not just about getting them elected. We have staff members that work directly with them to A, hold them accountable, to B, you know, give them model legislation they can propose, and really to C, you know, prepare them to be better messengers for the cause, to be out there with that platform. But what people miss, or what people can kind of glance over that I think has even more value than getting the folks elected, is the million doors that we knocked on. Think of the people that we talked to and the conversations we had with everyday Americans about the ideas that they should care about. Think about the experience you'd have as a college student. Let's say you're 20 years old, you're on the ground in Georgia supporting Matt Gaetler, known as Ron Paul 2.0 in Georgia, the only Republican to vote against the Republican budget down there. And you're there for 30 days with 10 other people, and you look around and you just got this guy elected by a 20-point margin. You know, you start to experience those things as a student. That's the real value here, is showing our activists they can make a difference, they can go out, they can reach people, and they can actually move the needle to help our ideas advance. But I really like to clarify and really like to make sure I make a point of that if we ever lose the ideas, we've lost the whole purpose of building this. You know, Ron's whole message was based on these principles and ideas of liberty, and that is what we're focused on, is how do we advance them both on campus by attracting new students, getting them involved, but then enhancing their experience and enhancing our message by taking them out in the community and reaching everyday Americans and showing our students, hey, look, if we work hard enough, which it's not that hard to outwork the Republican neocon establishment or the left, quite frankly, that we can actually make a difference. And that's what's happening through this program.
All right, we're going to take a quick break so we can talk to my daughter, Regina, who's 15 years old and who has been exploring the wonders of Skillshare. Regina, you're a writer. What was the first class you took?
It was about how to write a great character.
You were telling me about character types that you were learning about that ought to be avoided because they make for lousy stories.
There's the character type known as the Mary Sue, which is, you know, everyone hates her. It's an annoying character type because she's perfect and she has no weakness. A very big part of having a good character is that they can have good qualities, sure, but they also need to have weaknesses. And that's also where your character arcs come from.
So you think it was a good use of your time?
Definitely, yeah. Honestly, I think anyone who would be interested in writing fiction would find this really helpful.
All right, folks, so whether it's a hobby you'd like to pursue further or a skill you'd like to develop and acquire to help you on the job, get you ahead, even help build your own side business, Skillshare is the place to go. And you can join Regina and the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer for Tom Wood Show listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for free. That's right. Skillshare is offering Tom Wood Show listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 25,000 classes for free. To sign up, go to Skillshare.com/woods free. Again, go to Skillshare.com/woods free to start your 2 months now. That's Skillshare.com/woods free. Now, of course, back when I was in school, let's just say there wasn't yet a Young Americans for Liberty, but we had our little groups and we did the best we could. And at that time, and when I say that time, I'm talking about 1990 to 94. Those were my college years. And I recall plenty of political correctness and intimidation of people who had dissenting views, but I would take 1993, let's say, over 2019 on a college campus any day of the week. I can't imagine what it's like to be on a college campus now, especially if I were part of a, you know, let's say a non-mainstream student group. So what are you seeing out there? And to what extent has YAL run into this?
Yeah, so it's an epidemic, Tom. I mean, I used to try to stay positive about it, but I think our activists deserve for me to use the right terminology, and that is it is an epidemic. What you have right now is you have really an overzealous, I don't necessarily blame leftist activists for being the root of it. What I actually blame, or I mean, they're out there and they are they're the reason that it's ongoing. But what's happened is really the student affairs offices and these administrators and bureaucrats on campus that have kind of paired up with each other. You know, over the last decade, different schools have kind of used these free speech zones or these unconstitutional speech codes to either shut student groups down, shut speakers down. They bring the campus. And it's become a problem because groups have realized they can use it as a political weapon, or student affairs offices have realized, but they can use this facade of protecting the student, or even better, you know, saying that they're pro free speech. And because of that, you know, you have to do your activism in this one corner of the campus that there's no foot traffic in, you know, on the other side of the quad, which is just preposterous. But bureaucrats are bureaucrats, and they realize, I mean, it's literally a regulation on ideas. It's a regulation on student groups that they're using and that they've tested at certain campuses, and then they say, hey, we can use this. Now, some people argue it's not ideologically based, but let me share with you some of our stories, because I think the listeners out there, you know, it can become a very two-sided or it can become a very – people think, oh, it can't be that bad. But let me share some stories with you to kind of show why I think it's bad. And then I want to talk about what we're doing to change it. So the only way Young Americans for Liberty can succeed in our mission of reaching young people and getting them involved and making an impact is by being able to message the students on campus. Now, you have two different opportunities when you talk about academia, when you talk about a college campus, brick and mortar, university setting. You've got the in-classroom experience and then the on-campus experience. The in-classroom experience, I probably don't have to tell your listeners twice, Tom, there's a lot of work that needs to be done there, okay? The ideological bent of the classroom is not going to be towards free markets, civil liberties, and the Constitution. But that's not my bag. That is not where Young Americans for Liberty is working. I think that is something that's going to need to be alternatives to higher education, things like Praxis and some of these just different paths that students are taking or more conservative universities. But the on-campus experience is where YAL can touch. The on-campus experience is where YAL can do campus activism. We can do events on campus and host speakers and engage students in a way that they're actually going to open up and be exposed to the ideas and to be lifelong advocates for liberty. So when you talk about that on-campus experience, the only way that the YAL pipeline works is if we have the ability to do outreach, to recruit students. And one of the problems is when these bureaucrats and these overzealous administrators start to dictate what can be said, what can't be said, where it can be said, who can say it, that is where you run into problems, because they typically aren't going to not only agree with us, but they're probably going to passionately disagree and not like that we're pushing things like capitalism on a liberal college campus. So let me share just some of the different tactics that we've run into from the administrators. The first is they build into the codes what they call a free speech zone. Okay, these are areas, tiny little areas on campus that they try to say are the areas you can speak freely. Now, we had three activists in Michigan who were out, and they were on a campus, and our chapter president, Shelley Grigori, she's a young female. She's less than 5 feet tall. I'm telling you this for a reason, because when you hear the story, I don't want to hear that she was intimidating any police officers. So the college bureaucrat comes out and tells these three activists they have to go into a free speech zone. and that they're not allowed to hand out. Guess what they were handing out, Tom? I'll give you one guess. It's a very controversial document. Any guesses as to what they might be handing out on a college campus?
Is it a pocket constitution?
Exactly. So they're handing out the pocket constitution. I'm being funny here. It's not supposed to be controversial, but unfortunately on college campuses today it is. They're handing out a pocket constitution. The administrator says you have to go into the free speech zone. And they politely, very cordially and on camera, you know, say, we're not going to do that. You know, we have a right to be here. And, oh, if you need to know where that right is, let me hand you one of these pocket constitutions. You can look at the First Amendment. I'm literally handing out what gives me the right to be here. Doesn't get much more ironic than that. So long story short, the bureaucrat tells them they have to go. He ends up calling campus police. The students politely say, look, we are not going to be pulled away from where we are. They're in a public place. This is a public taxpayer-funded school in Michigan, which is in America. They're supposed to be abiding by the Constitution of the United States, which gives them the right to be there to speak freely. They're not soliciting. They're literally handing this out. They are arrested and they are placed in jail overnight. Now, since then, we have and I share that with you because that is one of the most egregious cases we've had. And I applaud the three activists for actually standing their ground. We don't encourage our students to get arrested, but it shows you just how insane some of these universities have gotten to kind of shut people down. Another one I'll quickly share. We have a Navy veteran in Jeff Lyons, chapter president at Bunker Hill Community College in Massachusetts, handing out constitutions. This guy took an oath to put his life on the line to defend the Constitution, being somebody who's from the Navy. They tell him that he is not allowed to hand out that document because it has not been approved by the Student Affairs Office. And I got to laugh when I hear that, but talk about just this nanny state of approving what documentation you can hand out to students at a public taxpayer-funded school. Telling a Navy veteran that he needs to get every document he hands out approved. And the one he's handing out is the pocket constitution, America's founding document, telling them that he has to get that approved. Now, there are tons of other cases I could share with you about free speech events they've shut down, speakers they've shut down because of, you know, security fees and these different tactics. But we actually launched a campaign, Tom, called the National Fight for Free Speech Campaign, to not just talk about these ideas, but to put these administrators on notice by going after them with a lawsuit, a threatening letter, and really even petitioning on campus to go after the codes. They hide behind these unconstitutional speech codes, and we have overturned 51 different campus speech codes across the country at different colleges. And what that has done is it has impacted over 1 million students, giving them the ability to hear all ideologies because we've stripped all of the unconstitutional BS that these administrators have implemented that really allows them to dictate what students can and can't hear. And this, we've got to do this because if we don't have the ability to talk to students, Young Americans for Liberty can't expose students to these ideas. And so that is why we have kind of made this a priority of the organization to fight back. And not just, like I said, not just talk about it, but to have real principled reform to say, look, we're going to go after you guys. And we have 51 victories, which has now allowed a million students to hear differing viewpoints and gives us the opportunity to do outreach to those students.
All right. This is all great. And I'm thrilled to hear about it. And I'm sorry about the bad parts. But let me just say one little thing, a slight bit of pushback here. I think when you hand things out to people, my sense is a lot of them just go in the garbage. So if I'm going to hand something out, I would want it to be something, I'm sorry to say, a little more thrilling than the U.S. Constitution. Because if somebody gets a pocket constitution, the pocket constitution is like a Rorschach test, right? They'll look at it and they'll see in it everything they think they need to see. Okay, I see general welfare, interstate commerce, necessary and proper. Yep, I'm good. It's not so much the words of the document as it is the interpretation of the document that's the problem. But secondly, even if you didn't even know all these clauses, I think if you just glance at the Constitution, you don't immediately say, oh, wait a minute, this establishes a strictly limited government where all the, I think you'd have to really, really study it and pay close attention. I think most people aren't. So if I'm going to hand something out that most people probably won't read or might throw away, I want it to be a lot hotter than just, here's the document that your sixth grade teacher gave you. Well, I'm also giving you a new one in college. I don't know. I want to give them something a little bit more on fire. That's my view of it.
Yeah, and I totally agree. So let me share this with you. I think you understand why we do it. We typically hand out pocket constitutions when we are trying to do free speech reform challenge. So what I'm getting at here is, of course, there is some value in giving out the Constitution, but really what we're trying to do is prove some of the irony, right? So when we target a campus to do an event outside of the free speech zone to give us legal standing to sue the school, we will legitimately be handing out pocket constitutions to show, you know, hey, look, here's the First Amendment. The way we reach students on campus, you're spot on in that if you hand a student a constitution, you're not going to awaken them, you know, overnight. You know, maybe 1 out of 10 reads a piece of it. 1 out of 100 actually, you know, sits there and analyzes it. And that's on a good day. So when we do events on campus, we focus in, we do what I call street theater. You know, it's called campus activism, but we're trying to really get people to be interested and then give them some good takeaways. So last semester, I'll share with you, we did one called Bring Them Home. And it's about our foreign policy. And it's really just talking about, you know, ending nation building, ending this idea of policing the world, and really getting students to analyze that, hey, maybe we shouldn't have troops in 120 or 130 plus countries, you know, 800 or 900 bases around the world, having those conversations with students. And we have these big spin wheels that we send out with pretty much the last 7 countries that we've bombed. And the students get an opportunity to spin them. Now, this might seem a little in your face or, you know, it might seem a little radical, but I mean, you know, we like to think that our foreign policy right now is pretty radical and that we're spreading ourselves too thin. And the students will spin it, and let's say they land on Afghanistan. So, you know, it's a mock draft, if you will. That's what we're doing on campus. And students from all different backgrounds, ideologically different, apathetic, they'll spin it. They land on Afghanistan, and we're going to talk to them. We'll give them a really quick fact sheet, something sexy and short and to the point, talking about why we're in Afghanistan and the need to bring them home. And that's why we call it Bring Them Home. But to start that dialogue with students based on an idea, because you're right, the Constitution and some of the more in-depth works and literature and the long-form books, it's tough to penetrate with students. And so what we like to do, if we can get them to show some interest in our foreign policy and have a real discussion, even if it's for 60 seconds, Tom, on campus, then we'll bring them to our Young Americans for Liberty meeting. We can watch a more long form, let's say, documentary. The students will have a debate or a discussion. But it's about getting them to just take a little nugget, take a little nibble, show some interest, be exposed to the ideas, and then get them to a meeting. They can hear a speaker. That's when we'd want to start getting them interested in understanding the Constitution, the principles. And I think you're right that the Constitution's a little too in-depth for people on the street corner. But I think that getting people engaged, that's why we do the street theater, to reach them where they're at and get them at least exposed and hopefully to garner interest.
Cliff, what is something that older Americans for Liberty can do to help young Americans for Liberty?
Yeah, so as I like to put it, there's three major things that we look for as an organization to succeed. The first is students. You know, so we obviously, that is who we're impacting. We are trying to recruit students. And so if anyone has college-aged individuals in their lives, whether it's kids, whether it's nieces, nephews, grandkids, connect them with us. You know, yaliberty.org, you can see what we're up to and you can get them involved, get them to sign up. The second thing is, you know, if there are different people who are looking to get involved, whether it's to run for office, whether it's to do something as a professional career or to start a local group, maybe not a YL group, but to get involved and spread liberty, you know, they can always reach out to us. So if there are people that are looking to take the next step in a much more direct way as a professional, you know, we'd love to help them look at opportunities and strategize with them. And the third way is funding. You know, we're always looking for ways that we can provide more materials for our students, more literature, more activism, just cool gear and swag, and to train our students. You know, we're doing five major training events this year. We're going to train at least 400 students at each of them. And that's a way for students to get exposed to the ideas, to learn the tactics, to message. And I don't mean just politically. I mean just in general. You know, how do you reach other people with the principles of liberty? So funding is the big thing we ask from a lot of supporters and older Americans, if you will, to help us continue to reach people, to pay for the trainings, to pay for the supplies. But there are tons of ways to get involved. And like I said, yaliberty.org and on Twitter at yaliberty. You know, we're always looking to kind of grow and figure out how we can be more effective. And that's the word I love to use with our team and with our activists. How do we become more effective at reaching people with the principles of liberty? Because that's the name of the game here. And we've got to get more people in the door, and we've got to do it without watering down the message. It's one of my biggest pet peeves is people are always trying to tell me how, you know, oh, well, if you just tone it down on this or tone it down on that. No, we've got to figure out how to tone it and tune it in so that it connects with people, but doing so without losing the core message of what we're trying to do.
Well, sounds very good. So it's yaliberty.org, just to repeat.
Yes, yaliberty.org and on Twitter at yaliberty.
Okay, so I'll also have those links at tomwoods.com/1341. So if folks want to help you out, and they darn well should, because you've been doing important work for, I guess it's about 10 years, right? Was it after 2000? It was in 2009 that it was started?
Yeah, so it was December of 2008. So we just passed
past 10 years. How about that?
Yeah, so we're having a good old time, and as Ron always taught us, you want to spread liberty, you need young people and you need music. So we're working on it.
Well, listen, if also anybody listening to this, I have plenty of people listening who are young and who are college students. If you'd like to start a chapter on campus, I'm sure if you go to yaliberty.org, you can find instructions on how to do that. So by all means, check that out. Thanks so much, Cliff.
Thanks again, Tom. Appreciate everything you do.
All right, folks. Well, speaking of the campuses, you know I have a free ebook consisting of stories of professors who stood up to the PC mob instead of just capitulating like almost everybody else. It's great. It's inspiring. You're going to love it. It's called Think for Yourself, Professors Who Resisted the Mob Tell Their Stories. Pick up your free copy at againstthemob.com, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.